Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I'm your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmers.
Hello, Judy. Hello, viewers and listeners. So, tell folks, Judy, our title for today's episode.
Sacred Sexuality and Sexual Communion, an interview with Satya Leela.
Yeah, we just finished that interview, and I invite you to stay tuned. It was really interesting. And, you know, people checking us out, especially recently, would think, oh, this is a podcast about Tantra, isn't it?
There we go.
It isn't really. It's a podcast that includes pretty much anything to do with couples, and it just so happens that the previous episode to this one and this one are both with Tantra people. Mm-hmm. And isn't that interesting? Just kind of...
It happens.
It happens. It just sort of happened
something
that way.
Something in the air. You know, indeed. The Tantra things are moving.
That must be what it is. And it's lovely. It's really lovely stuff. I do invite you to check it out. Before that, let's just briefly put in a word for, you know, if those of you watching can see over my left shoulder, a couple of my books. Why don't you tell folks the name of a couple of my
Isn't
books?
Isn't that your right shoulder?
Well, it's my left shoulder.
Oh, okay.
They're seeing it on the right, but it's my left shoulder.
Okay, so we have a couple of books that we are that we've been plugging away, both of them by you. One is Reigniting the Spark: Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back, and It's Not About Communication: Why Everything You Know About
about
couples therapy is wrong.
Yes, indeed.
It's like too much stuff in my head going on here.
Indeed. And while we're on the subject of books that one of us have written, gee, maybe we'll mention our sponsor.
Yes, our sponsor.
Yes.
The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber.
By Laria Zilber, who just happens to be...
me.
Yes.
That's right. That's my publishing pseudonym.
Judy's pseudonym. And it's a beautiful book. And boy, we just did it. You know, you'll see in the interview talking about tantric ways of connecting. And I will say, reading really sensual and sensuous and well-written erotica can be a lovely thing for couples to
it
do.
It certainly can.
And that particular book that you wrote, I would say, qualifies.
It certainly does. That's another way to reignite that spark.
It is, absolutely. One other thing, one other plug to make before we turn to our interview, I would invite people, well, two. I have to say two. One is to sign up for my newsletter, Dr. Chalmers' newsletter. You can do that right from our podcast website, ctn7.com. And I also am asking people for their stories about betrayal. I am working on a book currently. I'm in the middle of writing it. The working title, I think we decided to switch around the faith and forgiveness, didn't we? It's Betrayal, Forgiveness, and Faith. That is the working title of the book currently. So any stories you have about betrayal, and I was going to say especially, but whether or not you ended up being able to forgive it, I'm interested in all of that. So
you've gotten a few really good stories
I have indeed.
We'd like to have some more.
Yeah, folks have been responding to this.
Yeah.
And how can you get in touch with me, you might ask? Just go to ctn7.com. There's a way to send us a message, and that's probably the simplest way to do it. And so without further ado, let's go to our interview.
Our guest today is Satya Leela. Satya has taught people about sacred sexuality for over 30 years. She has seen thousands of clients and led hundreds of workshops all over the United States and in Japan. As the founder of the Sexual Communion Program, Satya specializes in helping women and couples to enhance their intimate connection, to allow the erotic divine energies to move through them, to feel the ecstatic bliss of a sacred sexual connection, and enjoy epic, earth-shattering lovemaking. Satya, welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here. I really appreciate your presence and your hosting this.
Well, it's great to have
it's
you.
It's our pleasure.
So we always like to start with our guests asking, how did you get into the work you do? Tell us something about your own journey into this.
Okay. Well, I was in my 30s when I got into this work. I was in a relationship that was really becoming a struggle. It had always a struggle, if I want to be honest. I realized later that I was with him so I could learn how to express anger.
Good to learn things from any situation, right?
Yeah. Sometimes the harder situations push you to do it. But we had a major disconnect when it came to sexuality. And I'd always been a really sexual being. And my energy was too much for him. And I kind of stifled it down. It was scary for him. Later, 20 years later, he told me that it was his stuff and that he was afraid of my sexual energy, but he wasn't even aware of that at that time. But I was trying to make myself smaller so that I could meet him, because I really wanted to meet him. And that wasn't working very well. I was really miserable. And we found a way to a Tantra workshop. We were living in Marin County, California, which was, this was like in the early 90s. And Tantra was just starting to become known in the West, and Marin was one of the centers of where it sprung up. And I just happened to be living there and found my way into it. And there was something about it that made me feel like I had come home. It was just, I remember having the thought, wow, a spiritual path that includes sexuality. I can't believe it. This is so for me, you know. And he and I went to one workshop and we had a beautiful connection. And I think it scared him because we never went back again. And we eventually broke up in about another year after that. And I started exploring Tantra on my own and quickly dove in into a kind of loose-knit community of people who were practicing Tantra. Connected a couple of long-term partners. It was a wonderful, wild time. It was very experimental, very yes was the word, you know. Do you want to do this? Yes, you know. Try just kind of like exploring the edges, exploring the wildness, exploring possibilities. And I remember reading a book written by a tantric master whose name is Osho. He used to be Rajneesh, and it was called From Sex to Super Consciousness. And the main theme of the book was that you can't transcend sexuality in your spiritual practice. You can't just rise above it. You have to go through it so it loses its hold and its charge, because of the culture that we live in is so highly charged around sexuality that we just, by growing up in this culture, we receive a lot of wounding and we have a distorted attitude towards sexuality. And so his answer was, live it out. Live out your fantasies, live out your dreams, your desires, until they lose their charge and they don't have a hold on you. And I remember reading that and I was like, well, I am living out my fantasies, but I don't want to lose that charge. But he was right. I did actually lose it. And it was a good thing to lose it, because it wasn't really a loss. It was a dropping away of something that held me tight, that held, you know, that I felt a little out of control with it. And by I'm not sure if out of control is the right word, but I'll let that go. Sex became a normal part of life. Just a beautiful part of life. I never lost my appreciation for it and the ecstatic bliss that I learned how to access during the days when I was in that tantric community has stayed with me and is still there. But it, one of my teachers has talked about orgasm being a glimpse of enlightenment. And I figure learning the techniques of extended orgasm and being in orgasmic energy for a half an hour or an hour or several hours at a time is a big glimpse of enlightenment. And it really shifted my whole spiritual connection in a very profound way.
This sounds like a good time to segue into a question, like, what do you mean by sacred sexuality? You know, listeners to this podcast might know one of my books, actually the book that sort of started this podcast, as we call it, called Reigniting the Spark. I have a chapter in there called Sex, Good Sex, and Sacred Sex. And so I've written some about, you know, what I'm thinking of as sacred sex. But I'm curious, like, how do you understand that term? And, you know, what is sacred sexuality? What makes it different from plain old sexuality or even good sexuality? How do you understand that?
Well, sacred sex is bringing the attitude of worship into the sexual connection. Mm-hmm. And the worship can span a lot of different ways. You can worship the god or the goddess within your partner's body. You can view them as a vessel for divine spirit, and each touch of their body is an act of worship and devotion. I love doing that. I love invoking divine goddess energy to flow through me and bless my partner with that energy. And also, sacred sex is a pathway to union with the divine. I've had experiences where I've been in sexual union with my partner, and the energy gets so big that I've flipped into what the yogis call a samadhi experience, a union with the divine, where my experience was that I had a vision of my yoni being a portal to, yoni is the Sanskrit word for vagina, my yoni being a portal to the divine energy. And I saw a shape of a yoni in gold on a black background with rays of light coming out from it. And then the next moment, I flipped into just floating in this field of infinite light and love and bliss, and it was timeless and ecstatic and beautiful and holy. And sex was the catalyst to activate that experience.
So you work with couples and individuals, so certain techniques that you teach people where they can get to that place, or is it general mindset, or how does that work?
It's both. The mindset is really important, and it's probably the most important part, because the techniques actually, after a little, they can be a little awkward at first to learn. It's kind of like learning to ride a bicycle at first. You're thinking about balancing and steering and braking and don't hit that tree. And after a while, you get on the bike and ride and enjoy the wind in your hair and the sun on your face. And it's a whole different experience. Sure. And the same is true for the techniques that I teach. They include movement and breath practices that help to circulate the sexual energy from the pelvis through the rest of the body, so that it becomes a whole full body experience instead of being localized in the genitals. And that sends you into a kind of altered state that makes this experience more likely to happen, this union kind of experience. It makes it it's kind of a happy accident when it happens, but it makes it more, you get more accident prone if you practice these. You know, that's a Osho quote too. I can't take credit for that.
I like that. Yeah, that notion that any sort of spiritual practice facilitates some kind of peak experience. It doesn't force it, because you, by the very nature of peak experience, you can't force it.
Yes.
And you can, indeed, you can make yourself accident prone. I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
That's really nice. So one of the things you call your program sexual communion. That has a sort of, did you choose that term sort of to resonate with a kind of, particularly among Catholics, I guess. We're Jewish, but, you know, I certainly understand the word communion. And among Catholics, it has a very, very deep spiritual meaning. I'm curious, you know, how did you choose that term?
That's a good question. I never actually thought about Catholics until you brought that up just now. I just chose it because it is working with these practices is like a communion with the divine, and a communion with your partner and with the divine, with yourself as well. So I chose it because it evokes the holy connection, but I wasn't thinking about the Christian, you know, Catholic or Protestant. Both do communion.
They do, yeah. And as an outsider to it, and you know, I'm a respectful outsider. I'm Jewish, and we are actively Jewish, so we would sort of Christian communion kinds of things. But when I've been to church services and seen it happen, it's fascinating. And again, the Catholics particularly, maybe Anglican or Episcopal to some extent, more than most of the Protestants, it's this, you know, transubstantiation. It's this deeply real to them encounter with God. You know, they are consuming God, which is an astonishing thing. And I'm just
why that seems to fit in with the sexual communion.
Yeah, exactly. It's this very physical manifestation of a deeply spiritual experience.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Thanks for pointing that out. I appreciate that.
Sure. Yeah. You know, you mentioned the orgasm is sort of a little, in Talmudic terms, they would call it the 60th part of enlightenment. I just made that up. But I mean, traditional Jewish sources, they'll talk about something like sleep is the 60th part of death, you know, or the Sabbath is the 60th part of heaven. You know, it's like a little bit of something amazing, you know. And so that notion of orgasm being a little bit of enlightenment, I noted that when I was writing about sacred sex as well. You know, anything can be sacred. You can have dishwashing. It's just the experience of orgasm in particular is so powerful for most people that, you know, it's an experience that most people, when they're able to have that, it's clearly bigger than yourself, you know?
Yes.
So it invites a sense of the sacred, I think. Does that sort of fit with how you understand it?
Yes. Yes, it does. Yeah. Orgasm is, all the senses really are a part of sacred sexuality, and orgasm is one part of it. But at the same time, another aspect of sacred sexuality is not being goal-centered on the orgasm.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It's you know, it's about cherishing each moment, and that in itself is a spiritual practice.
Yeah.
Being present, being in the moment, slowing it down, so that one little touch can resonate through your body, like a pebble thrown in a pond rippling out. I love slowing things down so that I can feel the ripples, ripple, 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 ripple. And that makes each touch more and more exquisite. Mm. So I used to be, when I first got into Tantra, I used to be more focused on the orgasm, but after a while, I got into the aspect of the slowness and the stillness and letting the energy build and slowly. When you build it slowly, it builds so much bigger that when you do go into orgasmic energy, it's a really hugely expansive experience.
I think that's I would note as the heterosexual male in the conversation, that's especially challenging for men, I think.
Yes.
Learn that. And of course, also fascinating for men to learn, as I'm sure you know, that orgasm and ejaculation are not equivalent.
Yes.
Separate physiological processes and
yes.
Can be separated. And when they are, it can be very, very powerful. It's one of the, you know, mm-hmm. It's, oh, wow, we could have orgasms like you women do.
I know, isn't that great? Yeah. Yes, I've seen many men be in orgasmic energy for like a half an hour. Mm-hmm. And it's not the peak kind of experience. It's called a valley orgasm, where there's rises and falls, that you go in and out of orgasmic energy, but you don't go over into ejaculation. Or for a woman, you don't go over into a strongly clitorally focused orgasm, because the clitoris will burn out and get too sensitive. Mm-hmm. But if you just visit it every once in a while and then go away again, it builds the energy in the rest of the body to a much higher peak.
So when you meet a couple, let's say, and so we're focused on couples therapy here.
Yeah.
Meet a couple, and this is a very general question, but what do you do with them? Like, how does it work when people consult you?
It really depends on what's going on with them. Mm-hmm. I look at the whole relationship, because sex is not isolated from the rest of the relationship. The whole relationship is in the bedroom. And so I look at what's their relationship like? Are they happy? Are they struggling? Has there been a betrayal? Is there a lack of trust? You know, just what's healing the wounds of the couple, and also the individual. Sometimes I work individually with people as well as together, because sometimes people have had a history of sexual abuse or just different kinds of upbringings that they have individual issues as well as the couple issues. So I look at what are they bringing into with their history and the history of their relationship. And then I look at skills. Do they know techniques of lovemaking? Do they know the different, like, for example, the difference between men and women's responses, and how to work with matching those up? How, like, for example, men are more genitally focused and women are more heart focused in general. That's a gross generalization, and I don't apply it to everyone, but in general, that is true. How do you make that meet in a happy way, so that the woman's genitals get lit up and the men's hearts get lit up, instead of the shutdown, because you're not meeting in the same place? How do you light each other up? And yeah. So that you're bringing something to each other that benefits each other. Mm-hmm. So looking at, I call it the nuts and bolts of sexuality. Like, don't go straight for the nipples, touch the side of the body first, or stuff like that. Yeah. And I teach breathing techniques that come from Tantra and yoga. To move the energy through the body and awaken the whole body. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I guide couples through a interaction. Often I do that, actually, where they're looking at each other in the eyes, and I guide them into a deeper intimate connection with breath and eye gazing. And sometimes I'll teach people to touch, how to touch, how to be present in their hands when they're touching. Those are the main things that I use.
Mm-hmm.
It's varied with different people, of course.
You know, it's interesting to me to hear as you describe it, because, you know, as a couples therapist, there, someone consulting you knows they're going to learn about sex, right? I mean, that's implicit in showing up at a sexual communion program, you know?
Yeah.
It's fascinating because you were saying, yeah, there's some couples where there's been betrayal and there's a lot of distrust and a lot of anger and hurt and stuff like that, which I imagine is true even for the folks who come to you.
Mm-hmm.
The difference, I think, in your experience and in much of my experience with couples is that lots of couples come to me as a couples therapist, not specifically a sex therapist, and they're having whatever issues they're having. And for many of them, they've so closed off any sort of sexual possibilities, even though, you know, it isn't necessarily about sexual abuse. Sometimes, of course, that's an issue. But even if it isn't, it's like, well, I'm sexual, but I can't imagine being sexual with him or with her. You know, it's they've closed off that avenue as a way toward healing. It's fascinating. Uh-huh. You need to imagine, you know, going to someone like you where it's clear you're going to be using sex as part of your healing. You know, some or touch or some kind of connection other than just arguing or even other than just hearing each other. You know, there's some physicality involved, because with a lot of the folks I work with, that's we have to work toward that.
Uh-huh.
And it's amazing when it happens, when people who come in and they've so drifted apart, it's so dangerous for them to go near touch because it'll turn into, you know, one of them being disappointed and the other being pressured, you know. And so they avoid it. And when they get past that and say, well, let's not exclude that as a way of connecting, then they often discover that a lot of things just loosen up.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting to me that, you know, I can imagine folks, if I referred some folks to you, they would look at me like I have three heads, because it's like, you got to be kidding. We're nowhere near doing anything with sex. But I imagine people who consult you are at least open to considering that maybe that's a pathway to healing.
Yes, yes, yes. I often say to people, if you've just had a great orgasm, you're really not too concerned about your partner left the dishes in the sink.
That's sort of the definition of a great orgasm, isn't it? It's one where you're not too concerned about whether your partner left the dishes in the sink. That's a great way of saying, well, how do you know if you had a great orgasm or just meh? You know, meh, so worried about the dishes. Greatest. I like that. What else should we be asking you about?
Sexual energy.
Please tell us about that.
Sexual energetics is a really fascinating topic. Based on the idea that the body is an energetic system as well as a physical system. And when I talk about sexual energy, I talk about what I'm talking about is something that acupuncturists and Taoists call qi, Aikido masters call it ki, yogis call it kundalini energy, and tantrikas call it kundalini. And it's all the same energy, just different names for it. And there are pathways through the body that the energy moves. The main pathway starts at the perineum, and it goes up through the center of the body, right along the spinal column, up to the top of the head, and then out the top of the head. And then there are a couple of spiral path, smaller pathways that spiral around it. It looks like the medical symbol, the caduceus, the serpents twining around the snake, which I think the AMA would be horrified to know that they adopted. Yuck, yuck, yuck.
You know, the funny thing is, some in the AMA would, and some wouldn't, oddly enough.
Yeah, that's true.
There are some folks, you know, in the traditional medical community that are quite open to other, you know, other understandings, other metaphorical ways of talking about stuff.
Yes, you are absolutely right. And I know many doctors who are really great and very open. Mm-hmm. So
many of these practices come out of the East rather than the West.
Yes.
Mentioning the Qi, the Qi, the Kundalini, the Tantra. Those are all Eastern thoughts.
Yes.
philosophies.
Yes.
I don't think we have much of an equivalent here in the West, do we?
No, I mean, you can
There
find
is.
things that remind you of it,
Yeah.
but it's certainly not as
So why,
central.
yeah, so why do you think that is?
Well, first I want to say there is a sacred sexuality that the Cherokee Indians practiced. It's called Kwadoshka. I've done a couple of workshops with Kwadoshka. I don't consider myself an authority on it altogether, but they do a practice where they circulate the energy between the different chakras, which are the energy centers that are located along the spine. So they are, that's the only Western originated, you know, there's Western Tantra, but it came from the East. And I'm not sure. I mean, there's such a difference between the materialism of the West and the mysticism of the East. That, you know, I think it just is an outgrowth of that. I don't know why. I think the West, us Westerners, have really hugely benefited from the influx of Eastern philosophy. You know, I don't know why we didn't go there ourselves, but
I suppose I could speculate, you know, that it's sort of a combination of, you know, like Christianity and its
Right, its
separation between
original
the
sin.
physical and right and
Oh,
spiritual,
yes,
and
of course.
also Descartes, you know, the body and mind being separate. You know,
Yeah.
I think, therefore I am, as opposed to I touch, therefore I am, or
Yes.
you know, all sorts of other possibilities. But
Yeah.
Descartes went with, no, it's all about what you're thinking.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that tended to separate us from our physicality.
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
You find among, like, among in Kabbalah, there are some currents, you know, Jewish mysticism, and also I think there are some elements of Christian mysticism that will also go
Yeah.
there, but it's certainly not mainstream for either Christians or Jews.
Yeah.
Interesting. I was just thinking about that when you were talking about all the different practices and where they sprung from. Sprang.
Yes, it is.
Yes. So, how can people get in touch with you?
You can go. I have a Linktree address. It's called Linktree, and it's got a funny little dot in it, Linktr dot ee slash Satya Lila, and that's Lila, sexual communion. It's all one word, Satya Lila, sexual communion. And it should be in the notes about this podcast.
I will put that there. And of course, they can also just search for your name, which is how I found your website when I was looking for it to check some things out.
Great,
So just
great.
Satya, Satyalila. So look for Satya Lila, and people will find you that way, I'm sure, as well.
Yeah, and those that has links to whatever offers I'm currently presenting, whatever classes I'm doing. It has a lot of free stuff on there, including a free sexual communion gateway session where I help you look at where you are in your own practice and see where you want to go and give you some recommendations of how to get there.
You also do workshops?
I do. I'm currently preparing to start a 3-month online women's group. It's going to start in February, and I do that from time to time. I do couples groups sometimes, women's groups sometimes.
Okay.
Most of it online at this point.
Online, so that's
So
so
available
people
from
don't
any
have to
place.
be with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, great.
Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you too. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Welcome back. We hope you enjoyed that interview with Satya Leela and her interesting tantra messages.
So we're just going to wrap up with just a couple of quickies here. One being buy our books. I got some. Judy's got some under the name Laria Zilber. And also any stories you have about betrayal. I'm looking for those. And oh, let's mention our
Ah,
merch.
yes, our
We've
merch.
got merch.
Right.
You can find that at ctn7.com as well. That clunk you heard, for those of you just hearing the audio of this, was our clunking together our beautiful Couples Therapy in 7 Words mugs in the 15 and 11 ounce sizes. They are just lovely, and they have our 7 words, which we've been through this whole episode and haven't said what the 7 words are. Judy, tell people what the 7 words are.
Be kind, don't panic, and have faith.
Be kind, don't panic, and have faith. And so, and that's how we always
conclude,
isn't it? And so until next time,
remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.